Thanks for coming to my workshop. This is called Curating Surprises, Demonstrating Cultural Apologetics in Public Places. And my name is Tom Becker. Went to Covenant Seminary here, as you can see, and graduated in 99. And now I live in a city called Lancaster. It's in Pennsylvania. And I brought along some snacks because when I do events in Lancaster, we try to have snacks that match the topic. We have some Pennsylvania Dutch sweet bologna and some cheese. We got some pretzels, so please load up, eat some stuff, enjoy yourself, and come and go as you need to. as it says here, I'm the curator and founder and director of the Row House Incorporated, and I'll be telling you a lot more about that. That's the point of this talk. So just in a nutshell, what my crew does out in Lancaster, we put on public events, and been doing this for over 20 years. Actually, I got the idea from LaBrie talks when they would have like community lectures at LaBrie, that sort of thing. Francis Schaeffer Institute has public lectures sometimes. That's where I got the idea. And we were doing these TED-style talks years before TED was even in. So we were way ahead of the curve. And unlike TED, they're a bit more substantial talks, maybe 35, 45 minutes with lots of Q&A, lots of food, lots of fun, and best coffee in town. So we've been doing that in the city of Lancaster, this is our ninth year doing that officially, but doing similar things for up to 20 years. So this Row House Incorporated has become a platform for a cadre of local speakers that I cycle through sometimes and national speakers. And it's open to the public. It's not a Christian event. It's a public event, but it is Christ-centered, and I'm a Christian. And I operate it as a way to intrigue people and to poke around and ask questions. People can bring their friends, and it's a revolving door. So anybody's welcome to come. But the main players would be myself and speakers and some of my board members and key people. I want to thank Mark Ryan for his enthusiasm about my book. It's featured at the book table, Good Posture. It's published by Square Halo Books, who has the book table here. My friend Ned is the publisher. There he is in the back. His workshop's at 1 o'clock. You're going to want to go to that. It's going to be really good. You'll have a bit less food than me, though, I must say. But I promote this book pretty much personally, and I sent one to Mark Ryan. What the heck? You know, I went to Covenant Seminary, got my MDiv, was active in the Francis Schaeffer Institute, and began to really inculcate and really put to work these principles I learned at Covenant Seminary. And it was my dream to be able to come back to my alma mater and speak. It took 19 years, but the book helped. I sent the book to Mark. I'm like, oh, here's this book. It's got a discussion guide. It's kind of a good book. I like it. Hope you like it. And he immediately emailed back. He was like, this is perfect, because we're doing the Schaeffer Lectures on imagination and apologetics. And I said, well, I'm your man. And he said, can you come and speak? I'm like, well, yeah. It doesn't matter what's going on. I'm going to come and speak. And then he said, and this other guy from Lancaster named Ned Bustard, he's coming to speak. And I was like, what the heck? How does my best friend in Lancaster get a gig speaking at my seminary? And Mark Ryan doesn't know who I am, so it's not that bad. But yeah, I was excited to come. So this work of employing imagination, reaching out to our current culture, it's something I've been doing for a long time. What I want to do this morning is three things. It's pretty ambitious, but I want to do three. I want to introduce to you the work of the Row House by giving you a flyover of my book, and that will help us sort of frame what it means to engage current culture with ancient faith in the ways that I've learned it. And along the way, I'm going to describe for you some of my favorite events, show you some pictures, and again, sort of a flyover of the contents of the book, so you'll know what it's about if you might want to go purchase it. So that's the first thing. And then the second thing I'm going to do, I want to pull away from the slides, and I just want to preach a little. Can you give me some time to preach? 15 minutes? A little devotion from the Word? Right. We'll do that after that. And then I'm going to leave the room. And my friend Ned is going to come up, and he is going to pretend that we're at the Row House Forum in the year in Lancaster City, Pennsylvania, and he's going to introduce me as a speaker. Now, it's a bit different. I'm going to come back in as the speaker. I will give a sample forum. Now, my talk will be 8 minutes long at most. Trust me. Because it's bound to some slides that come up and I have to stay with them. It's not exactly the kind of thing we do, but for the sake of time, I just want to give an example of a culturally engaging topic that will hopefully hit you sideways with to the extent that it has Christian content. So Ned will set that up, and I'll come in and do that. And I think if we do this right, we should have time for some Q&A. I hope so. We'll see. If not, grab me during the conference here. Well, thank you all for coming. This is really, really a blessing to have you here. One more person to introduce is my wife, Becky. She's my partner in life and family and ministry for 33 years, and she's also the mother to our 5 grown kids, who most all of them lived here in St. Louis and have been raised now in Lancaster, Pennsylvania. You might know of Lancaster because of the Amish. Raise your hand if you've heard of the Amish. But what most people don't realize, excuse me, is that Lancaster is the county seat of this agricultural economy and county. It has 60,000 people. It's quite an eclectic mix of people. High percentage of refugees, immigrants, people coming from, they aren't immigrants, they're citizens coming from Puerto Rico. We just have a real mix of people in the city. It tends to be the part of the county that's not super-duper white, not super-duper conservative, either theologically or politically. It's a mixed bag of people, and it's a great place to live. This is a picture you wouldn't know was from Lancaster. There's a rooftop of a bar that I loved downtown called Telus 360. It's run by an Irish guy who built this crazy, weird, European-style three-story event space. And the talk that I'm going to give at the end of this session is the talk I gave at Telus. And so we love the roof garden, and that kind of stuff's happening in my city all the time. What is the Row House Incorporated? well, picture a fruit smoothie. So it's not hard for me because I eat a smoothie every morning. And so what I want you to imagine is putting in this smoothie a lifetime of kind of being observant, underdog, not nerdy, not really nerdy, but kind of an arts-driven person. That's me. Tom Becker. My whole life of just sort of observing life and being really fascinated with town life and the way things are built and what I see right in front of me. So riding my bike, which I still do. I spend most of my time on my bike or walking. I don't go very far. So there's a lifetime of all that. There is also 20 years of undergraduate college ministry on secular campuses through parachurch groups and also through pioneering an RUF group in central Pennsylvania. I taught for 4 years at a classical high school, so you can throw that in the smoothie, teaching theology, writing, and history. And then just attempting to create this public platform called the Row House for the last 9 years. Throw that in there, in the mixture. You can throw in a year and a half of selling houses. You can pepper it with a little bit of adjunct pastoral ministry over the years. Becky and I have been very involved with our church. We still are. A little bit of preaching, a couple weddings here and there. So all these experiences, threw them all together, and in 2010 I came up with this this entity called the Row House. And it's called the Row House because in Lancaster, the emblematic piece of architecture is the row home. It's a picture of a vertical house made of brick. Philadelphia, Baltimore, Lancaster, all of these row houses. And when I didn't know what to name my thing that I was going to do, Becky said, why don't we call it the Row House? And I said, I'm getting that domain. And thankfully, it was available. So the rawhouse.org. And then all of our visual language and marketing is kind of centered on these architectural details of the row home. We live in a row house in Lancaster City. We raise our kids there. All right. The book is a distillation of principles of things that actually became part of the DNA of what the Row House Outreach is, and it's a work in progress. I'm still learning. There's a lot of things. I'm learning a lot of mistakes we've made along the way. I'm constantly retooling it, but the book gives me a chance to kind of tell the story and talk about principles. I needed a title for my book. And, I don't like the word balance. I like the word posture. I've always loved that word posture. It came up last night in the talks. Our posture towards our culture these days as Christians. I think that's really healthy. And I had some other weird names. got rejected by my publisher. And suddenly I happened upon my grandmother's. My grandmother Becker, Florence Becker, she used to slap my brothers and I. I had two older brothers, of course. She'd slap us. She'd say, "Stop slouching. You kids, you don't have good posture. Did you have a grandmother like this?" Well, there she is. And right there I am next to her. And, you know, she's about to whack me. Her picture came out. I thought, "Oh, good posture. What a great name." I sent it over to Ned. He immediately came up with this quirky cover of this guy named Charles Monsieur Charles Blondin. And I said, "That's it. You know, I'm into sideshows. I'm into human oddities and strange things like that. Perfect, Ned. Perfect. You got it." Even the back cover is spot on for me. And it's just, that was the mock-up, and that became the cover. So about this guy, let's talk about him for a second. He was a Frenchman. He was born in 1825. He's the guy that would walk across Niagara Falls, as you can see, numerous times, over 300 times in his life. On one occasion, he made an omelet on the wire and lowered it down to the Maid of the Mist, which is the boat with the people in it. And so you'd think I picked this guy in this cover because of balance. You know, we Christians should be balanced. We should be in the world but not of it, and we should be holy, but, you know, also kind of, and, you know, that's okay. But if you look at Jesus' life on earth and what we're called to be is we're re-imaged in his image, you know, re-humanized in the image of Christ, I think it's far from balanced, because sometimes he's spending an hour or two with his disciples just hanging out. And next thing you know, he's arguing with the Pharisees, he's hanging out with children, and he's dying on a cross, you know, and it becomes part of this huge injustice of death on the cross. This doesn't seem really balanced to me, but posture. Jesus was postured in the love of the Father. He talked about the kingdom and his Father all the time. He was rooted in a posture. And you know what? In Ephesians chapter 6, Paul, when he talks about spiritual warfare, he says that Christians, essentially, our posture is to stand. He doesn't say be balanced. He says stand. With all your armor, just stand in Christ. There's a posture of the same kind of reliance that Jesus showed. It ain't me. And I think that, you know, Blondin's good, his balance was rooted in that kind of posture. On one occasion, he took his manager and he began to walk him in a wheelbarrow. No, I'm sorry, on his back. He put his manager on his back. And he says to him, "Look up, Harry. You are no longer Harry Coolcord. You are Blondin. Until I clear this place, be a part of me. Mind, body, and soul. If I sway, sway with me. Do not attempt to do any balancing yourself. If you do, we'll both go to our death." Well, as we stand in Christ in our world, what should that posture look like? Well, I've got four ideas. And they're what my book is centered on. And you can see the four juggling balls, which is part of the language of the book, that indicate the chapters. And I'm going to go through those four sections. And there are civility, hospitality, humanity, and creativity. And again, I will go through those. This is what's come to define what we feel needs to be emphasized, at least where I live, as we conduct public events and we're trying to commend the merits of the Christian faith. Before I do a flyover of my book, I got to talk about my introduction. If you're here today, and like me, you have suffered what I call vocational dysphoria, my introduction is for you. Buy the book just for that. You come here today out of professional failure, disappointment, utter confusion, and in my case, your life unraveling and having a total breakdown. You may be asking, who am I? Who am I? What am I supposed to be doing? Where do I fit in God's world, in the church? I don't know what to do next. Nothing makes any sense. I don't fit. Then my introduction is for you. It's about calling. Here's my dog, Rue. She has never suffered vocational dysphoria. She's a border collie, golden retriever mix. Her posture in life is to dance with Tommy when the music gets loud and funky. She brings her rope to me and we start to dance. Her job, her posture is to maniacally just retrieve stuff. To eat milk bones and trash whenever she can. This is her posture. And to lay around like a little black bear in our house and to cuddle. The work of the row house for me became a kind of lifesaver. All this has been surprising to me, as surprising as the day 5.5 years ago this dog came to our doorstep, quite literally. I'm so happy to tell you guys about it. But let's talk about these four principles as we begin to look inside my book a bit. It's a bit of a flyover. There's no need to tell you that in our culture today, we could use a little dose, tiny little dose of civility. And, may I say, coming out of the sometimes cynical evangelical environment, we ought to perhaps demonstrate a lot more civility. First chapter is called Quick to Listen, and the second chapter is called Slow to Speak. And you know where I got those, from the Epistle of James. Am I doing something wrong to make this all scratchy? Cut that out. Why should we listen to our culture? Because God made everyone in his image, and he leans into culture. He doesn't run from culture. And so we lean in and we listen. We as Christians ought to be the people known for the biggest ears in town. We can learn from people. Why I do my forums. And by the way, these photos are all photos I've taken, or unless I mention it, they're, except for the guy on the Niagara Falls. I got all made up for that, and he shot it in his studio. That was tough. That was a hot day. But, you know, here's an example of one of our forums. And when I tell my audience, listen, when someone asks a question, listen to what their question is as an audience participant. Listen to someone speak who you might not agree with. You can learn from people outside the faith or who just have honest questions. I tell my speakers the same thing. Handle people with care and be slow to speak. And keep, you know, this, I want to just make a little disclaimer. A lot of what we've talked about this weekend has to do with interpersonal communication. How do I talk to? What is my posture in this situation? I'm glad if there's applications to that. But I have to say, my burden for writing this book was much more corporate. I'm thinking much more corporately, culturally. So you may not be a verbal evangelist or apologist. And that may not be your call in life. But as a group, as a culture of people, a community, how can our culture be more quick to listen, slow to speak? So it's not only interpersonal, though there's application to that. I'm concerned with, of course, engendering careful speech when we are in conversation with people. And the reason I wrote these chapters and put them straight up front is because I need them. I'm an extrovert. I don't like to hear myself talk because I have a weird voice, but I just love to make people laugh, and I get uncomfortable with certain kinds of emotions, and I try to change. So I'm learning how to actually communicate with people on an interpersonal basis. And my book has been challenging to me to do that, to really listen and to communicate what is edifying in that moment. God help us all. There are ways to communicate what we have to say with conviction because of our convictions that is also winsome. Here's an example. Caitlin Beattie is a writer some of you might know. Lives up in Wheaton, and she's getting a lot of traction. Atlantic Monthly, Christianity Today, she's a good writer. And we had her speak a year after the election. And I didn't want it to be a red night or a blue night or a political night, but she knows politics really well. And her talk, what a year it's been, political engagement in the Trump era, was very timely. And she did an awesome job at very, you know, convincingly describing why so many evangelicals voted for Trump. Why is that? Help us understand that. Because there were people in my audience who maybe voted for him or didn't vote at all. And it's like, what is going on that seems like Christians have wholesale gotten behind Trump. So we're able to step behind that a little bit and talk about some of the contours leading out of the religious right into where we were. It was very helpful. It was winsome. There were lots of different kinds of people there. And nobody got hurt. So civility, hospitality. LaBrie, fellowship, what an influence on us. We've tried to use those disciplines, those practices in a city environment. That's a much more disintegrated environment than living in a Christian community, but we've tried through our church to be a community within the community of the church in our city through the things we've done. Now, our events, like this used to be in my house. So our row house, we'd get the chairs out, we'd have 30 people, and there'd be food and dogs at people's feet, and it was crazy, and sirens outside, and it was cozy. It was that, and people would hang around for hours. It was really cool, but after a while, I was like, you know, I'm getting a little weird about this, and we can still do small events here. We moved to a, in God's providence, we moved to a performing arts center downtown. It just so happens. The Performing Arts Center is directed by one of my close friends in Lancaster, and my other super close friend, Ned, runs the gallery there. So together we collaborate, and I can use this beautiful Beaux Arts ex-bank building in downtown Lancaster whenever I want, for free, for public events. And it's a public-facing institution. It's been an amazing opportunity. So we moved to Ned's gallery. It's still a bit cozy in the gallery. We bring food in. We act as hospitably as we can. And, there's always food. And the food oftentimes matches the topic. So, for example, our forum on neuroscience by Katrina Hostetter, who is a graduate of Covenant Seminary, I insisted that we have gummy brains. Now, my production manager, Jessie, she got the brains, and I think we had maybe 8 of them left over, which I all ate. I ate all of them. In November, we're doing an event on the Pennsylvania Dutch, which is prevalent throughout Lancaster, be it Amish, Mennonite, or me, because I'm German in history. We're doing a Pennsylvania Dutch thing. I cannot wait. We're having Scrapple. A woman who's a foodie writer from Philadelphia, she's not a believer per se, but she is so happy to come. And we're going to do a breakfast with her. We're going to have Scrapple. She's going to talk about the history of Scrapple. If you don't know what Scrapple is, you ain't living. So my two chapters in this section of hospitality are In the Flesh, which is toward examining a Christian household culture. Whether you're single or have a family, what does it look like to have a household that reflects the kingdom culturally? And then also in the faith, the next chapter is on the church, the importance of having a rooted confessional church in which to invite people into. Because I am a churchman. I'm a churchman. I'm not ashamed of it. And then the third, did I talk about hospitality? Oh, here's the event. So here's the example of the event. Last March, we had this guy, Carl Fisher, come to town. He's a roaster in a very small city called Williamsport. He does excellent work. I found out about his coffee shop through my kids, and I didn't know he was a Christian. But all I knew is that he was pretty much single-handedly reviving the downtown life of a small city through an excellent coffee shop. Elevating community, he calls it. I'm like, that sounds like a Christian idea. He's doing exactly what I want to showcase. So I brought him down. He is a believer. He's part of an Alliance church in town. He used to be a youth pastor, but doing excellent work through coffee. And the best part about this event that thrilled me, we had tons of people there, 70 people, sold out. And we had coffee. The best part about this event was that we had a post-party. And the post-party was at a warehouse on the other side of town with my favorite roaster in town, Square One. And the Square One people know Carl, and they invited him to this party at the warehouse, and it's called a throwdown. So the coffee community, a lot of millennials, you'll know what a throwdown is. You come, and the baristas have competitions, and they play music, and there's beer, and there's dancing. It's awesome, awesome time. And Square One threw a party. There was probably 80 people there. A lot of people I didn't know. Some of the people from my forum came just to mix it up, and Carl was, they rolled out the red carpet for Carl. And the punchline of that is Square One Coffee. They're owned by a couple who are now post-Christian. They were in missions, youth missions and things. They got burned out. They're turned off. They're completely deconstructing their faith and not reconstructing it. So they were a bit hedgy about me collaborating. And I assured them, I just want to throw a party. I just want Carl to be there. And so it was cool. We had a party. That, to me, that feels like a coup for the kingdom. I had such a good time. All right, so the next big section, which is my central section of the book, is humanity. And my main point in these chapters is to just show, as Jerem has and many of our theologian friends have shown, that to be a human is not a mistake. It's not something to apologize for. It's a glorious thing to be human, even to be damaged good that we are. God is restoring and rehumanizing us in Christ, not turning from humanity. So that's my burden for these chapters. And this chapter 5 is called Earthlings Are Enough, in which I give people permission to be fully human through Christ. Keep in mind, I'm just telling a lot of stories in these chapters. There we go. Get it off the denim. Yeah, it's that thing. It's that thing. If you're listening at home. My lovely assistant, Daryl. Let's hear it for him. Please don't interrupt me again, Daryl. All right. Earthlings Are Enough. Nothing is not sacred. This is like, where do I get my topics? Well, besides being interested in everything, there's some theology behind it. Abraham Kuyper looms large in that chapter, but it's just straight up Reformed sort of theology and why everything's important and why nothing is not sacred. And then chapter 7, Love the One You're With. There's where I get to have the most fun, which is where I talk about life integration in a time of just physical and spatial disintegration. I talk about the importance of just getting to know our neighbors and knowing where we are and where we are embodied. You know, what are we inhabiting? Towns, places, culture. In humanity, under that, my favorite event this past year was in February. Musician and composer and professor Crystal Grant, who's a friend of the Row House, been wanting to find a way to have her speak. She spoke on breaking chains, fueling freedom with protest songs. And what was awesome about this event is a lot of people came, and again, every time we have an event, it's a revolving door. There's always six people I don't know, which is what I want. People can bring their friends. They won't be preached at. They won't be prayed over. You know, it's pre-evangelism at the most. And so she just gave this awesome talk and demonstration. And the best part was she played an entire piece on the piano by Thelonious Monk. We sang gospel spiritual songs together as an audience. So it was very embodied. It was very, very real. All right, creativity. I wanted to call this section whimsy, but one of my board members said that sounds too flimsy and like, not call it creativity. What I mean by these chapters is whimsy, really. And in this chapter, chapter 8, it's called Life's a Party. And by looking at Ecclesiastes and some other passages of Scripture and talking about some crazy things I've done, I wouldn't do again, I talk about why, of all people, Christians should be throwing the best parties. Our yearly church calendar, in fact, Israel's feasts were based upon partying and feasting, not fasting, although fasting is a part of the Christian life too. The role of fun, especially for those who believe. I want my audience to have a good time. I want them to come away going, gee, that was fun. What happened? And that does happen. When this is a Christian thing, how could it be? In the Celtic Book of Prayer I'm going through this week, came across this prayer. And I cannot believe it's from the Church of Scotland, but it is. I have had enough of sad saints and sour religion. I have had enough of sin spotting and grace doubting. I need some laughter, Lord, the kind you planted in Sarah. But please, may I not have to wait until I'm 90 and pregnant. We need to laugh, y'all. And one of my favorite events that we had regarding creativity, Matthew Dickerson, some of you know him, he's spoken twice for us, and he gave a talk in November called Rivers and Streams in Our Collective Experience and Imagination. That was my title, and I said, Matthew Dickerson, I know you can fit this in. He's a Renaissance man. He's a musician, computer science professor, author of all kinds of books about Narnia and Middle Earth. He's a fisherman. He's an angler, fly fisherman. He just knows it all. And his talk was riveting. You can go to therowhouse.org, listen to my past events, listen to Matthew's talk. It will blow you away. And the best part about this event, it was a triple threat because it was a big event. A lot of people came. We did a stream walk the next day with him, with another guy who's a fly fisherman from the local area. And I thought to myself, watching these 12 people, all Christians, caring about the streams and talking about conservation and talking about these little bugs and the importance of certain kinds of trout and why it's important to take care of our water, I just wanted to cry. And then, not only that, the Lancaster Conservancy, that yearly does a water week to raise awareness about the streams and water, because we have a lot of bad farming practices in Lancaster, hundreds of years of bad practices, they care about the streams. And they co-sponsored this event, and they came in at a table, partnering with a group that's not in the church, but I think we made friends. So, what I'm trying to do is demonstrate to my fellow Christians and to the friends they bring, or people just simply drop in because they're like, oh, that looks like a nice gallery. Ma'am?
Could you go back and show the Matthew Dickerson picture? Because you didn't show it while you were talking about it. So.
I apologize for that. I saw it up here. There's Matthew, and there's the stream. Just, yeah, take it all in. Thank you. So what I'm trying to do is just provide a platform. People can come and see what God is trying to do in restoring all of creation, to lean into our culture with some grace and mercy. I don't want to create an echo chamber. I live in a Bible Belt. It's a very Christianized area. And so I kind of have to go out of my way to interest people who are thoughtful believers, also people who are thoughtful but not Christians, and they've given up. We have a lot of post-evangelical millennials in my city. And sometimes they come. We've been marginally successful at building a bridge to them, but that's really a passion of mine. So that's why I dig deep into my own personal craving for understanding all kinds of aspects of life, but I also try to listen to my friends and bring them in. I rarely speak at these things. I just don't speak anymore, actually. I show people off. So my hope is that anyone who comes in will taste and see that he is good. You know, even if they can't quite put their finger on what they're tasting, I want to create a desire in my community for more beauty and goodness and truth without getting into using group speak. By creating a good cultural experience. That's the work of the Row House. Could I? No, the lights are good here. I just want to go off screen. I'll leave this up. I just want to say a few things from the Bible. I'm looking at Acts 14. It's Acts 14, verses 8 to 18. There it is. In my town, I sit on my porch. It's my favorite room, front porch. Whoops. I didn't mean to do that. I sit on my porch. I'm supposed to... Yeah, there it is. Sitting on my porch, across the street is a big city park called Buchanan Park. And I'm sitting here having my lunch, with my dog at my feet. And I see orange fence going up. I see people streaming in, parking. I see families coming in. There's booths set up. I hear music. I see a lot of balloons. There's booths, people coming and going. And it's a beautiful day. It's just, you know, spring day. People having the time of their life, enjoying this amazing festival across the street. And I sit there, eat my lunch, and I'm like, do I go to this thing? Do I get up off my porch and go to this thing? Some of my friends go to this thing. And they go because they want to show their love and their friendship with their friends who are at this event. Other people that I know don't go because they're like, I just don't think that's a thing that I would like to encourage. Other people come to the event with signs to protest the event. Jesus hates you. Come to Jesus. He hates you because you're queer. Or you're going to hell because of your lifestyle. Can you guess what festival it is? Of course, the Lancaster Pride Fest. And I sit there and I struggle because I have friends who are there who I care about, yet I also, as a believer, I doubt whether that kind of festival is what human flourishing is about, and yet people are having a good time. It's kind of a harmless event. Do I go? I honestly struggle. Now, it's since moved downtown, so I don't see it across the street. I forget sometimes, but it pops up on social media, like, do I go to this? Show allegiance? Am I an ally or not an ally? And so I'm just telling you my struggle. I'm not here to tell you what you should think. There are some similarities in my mind to that experience with the passage I'm going to read. There's a lot of huge differences, too. There really are. But what I picture is Paul coming in this, in his case, a truly pagan environment. And we can talk about what is off or pagan or whatever about the Pride Fest. We could talk all day about that. But he's clearly coming into a Greek pantheistic pagan situation. And it's like this. It'd be like if Tom Becker went to the Pride Fest and they said, hey, Tom, here's the mic. What would I say? You know, when the drag queen contest is over and they're starting the new band and they say, Tom, what would you like to say to all the families out there? I picture that when I picture this passage. Because here's Paul. He's given the mic. Let me read this from Acts. And by the way, Acts 17 is a classic apologetic passage. That's a great passage. But I feel like for what I'm doing, what I need right now, this passage has spoken more to me than Acts 17. Now at Lystra, there was a man sitting who could not use his feet. He was crippled from birth and had never walked. He listened to Paul speaking. Actual footage from the event. And Paul, looking intently at him, and seeing he had faith to be made well, said in a loud voice, "Stand upright on your feet." And he sprang up and began walking. And when the crowd saw what Paul had done, they lifted up their voices, saying in Lyconian, "The gods have come down to us in the likeness of men." Barnabas they called Zeus, and Paul Hermes, because he was the chief speaker. And the priest of Zeus, whose temple was at the entrance of the city, brought oxen and garlands to the gates and wanted to offer sacrifice with the crowds. But when the apostles Barnabas and Paul heard it, they tore their garments and rushed out into the crowd, crying out, "Men, why are you doing these things? We also are men of like nature with you, and we bring you good news that you should turn from these vain things to a living God who made the heavens and the earth and the sea and all that is in them. In the past generations, he allowed all the nations to walk in their own ways, yet he did not leave himself without witness, for he did good by giving you rains from heaven and fruitful seasons, satisfying your hearts with food and gladness." Even with these words, they scarcely restrained the people from offering sacrifice to them. I think what strikes me most about this passage, when Paul's given the mic, and again, I'm going to take 5 minutes with this, distill it down. Somehow he's able to proclaim to these people that God, unlike these vain things, is holy, and he's also merciful. He's holy. He's outside of creation. He's able to heal this young man. He's a God that doesn't need people, and yet he's merciful. He's active in the world in acts of mercy. Turn from these vain things. Turn to this living God. His holiness combined with his mercy presents itself as kindness. Lewis said you can't be happy without God. And he's kind of right, if he means ultimately. But if you look at this passage, it's insane. It's an insane idea that Paul says, look, in the past, God overlooked a lot of things. He gave you seasons and rain. Why? To give you happiness, to give you joy in your hearts. Unless you think, oh, that's just temporary happiness that pagans have and they don't. It's the same word used in Acts 2 to talk about the disciples finding happiness in God. God did this to them. Why would he be so kind? According to Paul, he did it to lead everyone everywhere to repent. I mean, we half expect Paul, in this passage, given the mic, he's going to slam dunk these people. He's going to talk about God's judgment. And he does. You know, he goes there. He's calling everybody to account. God's still holy. But then he says, he's overlooked all this. He's kind. He even gives you happiness. And to be honest, when I think about the Pride Fest, there were times I think, well, it would just would rain and he'd go home, it'd be nice. But he doesn't. What's God doing? I know one thing's for sure. He's being merciful. And we know this. We aren't surprised by this. Jesus said, God makes the sun and the rain fall on the righteous and the unrighteous. And he calls that holiness. He says, be holy as I am holy. You want to be my disciple? Do this. It's holiness mixed with mercy, which shows forth in kindness. And, you know, I'm not that holy yet. I'm not that kind. And there's no way you and I could out-holy God or out-kind us God. He's too wild for that. We can't out-kind him, but we can serve him. We can learn his ways. And we can rely on him to be that way for us. This mercy is what we call common grace to all creation. Why? To lead us all to repentance. And is that the image of God you have? Is that the God that you serve? Is this the God that we're trying to, in word and deed, proclaim to our culture today? And why we're here at this conference? Is that the God we believe in? That his kindness, even through us, could lead people to repentance in a more powerful way than if we just question people's motives and judge them and try to get them to shape up. I'll be honest, it's a stretch of faith for me. I'm challenged by it every single day. Because when I walk downtown and I see my friend Dave, who loves the Lord and wears tats and runs an Inklings Cafe and is serving God, and then I see the next person at Square One Coffee who's living an alternative lifestyle, I got to give them the same hug. They get the same hug. They should. But sometimes I think, do they get the same hug? Of course they should. Do you see what I'm saying? I'm challenged by this notion of kindness. God's holiness, mercy, presenting itself in his kindness. And does that define who we are and our posture and culture? Could it possibly define how we present him in our culture today? The Row House is my attempt to try to do that through events. All right. Thank you. I'm going to leave. I'm going to hand it over to Ned.